Hey guys, Michael here with Wedding Videography School. If you're looking for a solid and reliable contract that you can feel good about sending to your clients, look no further than the WVS contract, crafted by a licensed attorney in the state of Colorado. It might just be the best contract for wedding videographers in all of North America, or even maybe the world. Hard to know. Regardless, if you're unsure of whether the contract you're using right now is good enough, go to weddingvideographyschool.com right now, enter the password podcast, and start protecting yourself and your business today. Hey guys, Michael here with Wedding Videography School. Hope all is well. Hope you're having a great week. I know I am. This morning, I am packing up and getting ready to leave for beautiful Steamboat Springs, Colorado to film a wedding that's happening tomorrow. I like to get up there the day before and get my evening aerial shots because I know I'll be too busy during the actual wedding to be doing that. And then my plan is to actually camp in the Land Rover. So yeah, I'm going to pull off the road, find a nice secluded spot to do a little four-wheeling, I suppose. And just sleep in the truck. So I'll try to post a Instagram photo of my sleeping setup when I get there. It's going to be great. I'm actually going to be filming at one of my favorite venues of all time, which is Flying Diamond Ranch. And the thing I like about this particular venue is the landscapes. You have hills, you have trees, you have ponds and streams and I think there's some livestock. I don't know. Can't remember if there's any livestock or not. But it's just such a beautiful spot. And the ceremony spot, well, there's two ceremony spots that they use. One of them, I don't know. I don't really like it because it's up on this hill and it can be windy there or it can be really hot because there's no shade. But they have an aspen grove ceremony site too, where you just get married in front of a bunch of aspen trees. And that's my favorite spot. And I don't know why anybody would get married at the other spot, but every once in a while that happens. I don't think that's going to happen at this one. I think given that it's going to be warm, it's going to be almost 90 degrees tomorrow. I think they're probably going to opt for the aspen location if they haven't already. So it should be a good time, and I'm looking forward to that. So obviously today I'm flying solo on this episode. Adam Bradley is celebrating his anniversary with his wife. I don't even want to think about it. Very gross to think about what might be happening in the world this weekend. Just glad I will be at least 4 hours away from wherever they're at. So that being said, I do want to do the second episode of two. The first episode that I did in this two-part series, I guess if you want to call it, was five things that I've done wrong as it relates to wedding videography. So in this episode, I want to talk about five things that I've done right, or at least that I think that I've done right and have served me well during my career as a wedding videographer. So let's jump right into it. The first thing that I think has served me well, and if any of you have listened to this podcast for a while, you know that I talk about the value of hard work. Once an episode. maybe not, but hard work to me is extremely crucial to being a successful wedding videographer. And I can't tell you how many times over the years, and even honestly, semi-recently, I've had people trying to convince me that you don't really need to work that hard to be a wedding videographer. Now, when I say hard work, I'm not talking like there's jobs out there that are hard, right? There's laborious jobs out there that are hard that, to be quite honest, are exhausting, right? They're physically exhausting. I actually think that wedding videography is unusually physically exhausting, especially when you hit your 30s. When I wake up after a wedding, I kind of feel like Not, I don't feel like I got hit by a bus, but I feel like I got hit by like a moped or something. And, you know, when you're spending 10 hours on your feet and sitting down for like 30 minutes, it's exhausting. But listen, I know there's other jobs out there that you would consider hard work, right? Like being a roofer, you know, being on top of a roof all day, pulling shingles and sweating in the hot sun on 90 degrees days and 100 degree days even. So I'm not comparing wedding videography to that. And that's not what I mean by hard work. What I mean is being diligent, being on time, doing the things you say you're going to do, putting in the effort to please your clients, editing awesome videos, not trying to necessarily delegate everything to other people. There's a big movement, not only in wedding videography, but it feels like in the whole world ever since Tim Ferriss wrote this book called The 4-Hour Workweek, where people just want to try to delegate everything, all their responsibilities to other people. But the truth is there's no real shortcuts to being an incredible wedding videographer. Now, yes, you can run a business where you have multiple editors and you have multiple videographers and stuff like that. And that's all good and that's all fine. But at the end of the day, you're still going to be putting in work and hours, really trying to get good at your craft, for a lack of a better term. I really don't like when people say get good at your craft, because God, that's just one of those phrases that's just so overused now. But everybody knows what I mean by it, so I'll just say it. Hard work. I think I've worked really, really, really hard. And sometimes, you know, if I'm being honest, I've worked too hard. There was a period of time where my wife was like, you need to... She's like, you need to stop going into your office after 6 p.m. Because what would happen is I would work all day, and then we'd eat dinner, and then she'd find me back in my office, like doing more editing or converting footage or doing things outside of work hours. And I will say that I have, for the most part, stopped doing that and just tried to strike a better work-life balance. So I think that's always important and crucial. The hard work for me, the diligence, the never stopping, you know, that did get out of hand for a little bit. But so far I've been pretty good about, you know, I'd say over the last 2 years or so, I've been actually so much better about not walking into my office after, you know, 5 or 6 PM at night. I occasionally, you know, last night I actually came into my office to export a bunch of wedding day footage for a client, but that was literally like, that took 3 minutes of my time to get that going. And then every once in a while, I'd pop in just to make sure the end code was still going. And then right before bed, I popped in again to export a ceremony that was like an hour-long Catholic ceremony for another couple. Figured I'd let that export overnight because I knew that would take a little bit of time too. So yeah, I still like to use my time wisely and not let, you know, a whole night go by where my computer isn't doing some work for me. But yeah, people try to sell shortcuts all the time. You know, and like I said, I do kind of feel like it started with the Tim Ferriss book, The 4-Hour Workweek. But if anybody out there knows Tim Ferriss, which I don't, but I'd be willing to bet that Tim Ferriss does not work 4 hours a week. I bet he works way more than that. And all the stories that I've ever read about people who are super successful, they work long hours. Like Elon Musk is a dude who like sleeps, you know, by all accounts, like 5 or 6 hours a night. So even the people who could retire and live on a beach or whatever, they put in long hours and they work hard and they work diligently. So that's what I would encourage people to do. Get out of this mindset of, I'm just gonna, you know, hire other people to do everything for me. Yeah, and like I said, it's not bad to have people, and you need help and you need people for sure. But there's no shortcuts. There's no shortcuts to a successful business or career. Okay, the number two thing that I think that I've done correctly is learn from my mistakes. Now, I haven't always learned from my mistakes right away. Sometimes it takes me making the same mistake four times to realize, like, oh, I can't do this anymore. Here's a good example. I used to shoot ceremonies with two cameras. So I'd pop up a regular camera on a tripod as opposed to an irregular camera on a tripod. I'd throw up a camera on a tripod in the back and shoot the ceremony wide. And then I would wander around with a monopod and shoot the ceremony, like shoot the bride and groom vows with just a monopod. And then I'd switch sides. Like, so the bride would read her vows, and then I'd run my ass around the entire ceremony site back behind the other camera so I wouldn't get in the shot, and then I'd run around to the other side to capture the groom's vows. Like, I did this forever. Like, so long, it's ridiculous. Probably, like, 5 years I did it for. Like, half my career was spent with me, like, just hustling my ass around the ceremony site with a monopod. And after a while, I realized I'm missing, like, it wasn't unusual for me to, quote unquote, miss the first, you know, few lines of the vows. And if it was really bad, I would miss, like, the first half of the vows with that close-up camera angle. So I realized I didn't realize pretty quickly because I did it for 5 years, but eventually I realized, like, this is stupid, because I would sit down and I'd edit and I'd be like, this is like, why am I doing it this way? Like, it doesn't need to be done this way. Why don't I just get another camera and another tripod and set it up? Like, how much longer could it actually take? And really, it probably takes me 5, maybe 6 at the most 7 minutes to set up another camera. That's really not that long. That's not that long to just make sure you have another angle. And, you know, there's somebody whose name I won't mention who recently shot a ceremony for me, and they did the same thing that I used to do. And I was like, man, this is crazy that this person is still doing it. Because this person is actually, like, a high-end wedding videographer, and they're still doing it like that. And even though it took me 5 years to learn this, like, I eventually corrected my mistake. And I think that you have to be willing to learn from your mistakes and say, okay, I'm not going to let this happen again. I recently heard a podcast with Joe Rogan, and he was talking about, God, I can't remember. He was talking to like this like Navy SEAL or something. He likes to have Navy SEALs on his show for some reason. And he was talking to this guy who does like a lot of bow hunting and camping and all this kind of stuff that I've slightly gotten into. And the guy, at some point, they were talking about career and success and becoming a better man and blah, blah, blah. And Joe Rogan said something that actually really struck me. And he said he used to be the kind of person that was always trying to escape work, and he was just kind of a lazy dude. And then at some point, he had this revelation of, like, if I want to be somebody, if I want to be great, if I want to have a good life and accomplish stuff, then I got to get rid of the bullshit. Everything that was in my way of being successful was just bullshit, right? And there's another podcast that I listen to, Adam Carolla's podcast. I think it's just called The Adam Carolla Show. He had a similar talk in one of his shows where he said there was this moment in his life where he was riding down a street in California in his old beat up pickup truck. And there were these cups and glass, like, I don't know, maybe bottles or cans or something rolling around in the front passenger footwell of his truck. And they had been in there for a week, and they were annoying because they were like rattling around and stuff. And he's like, he had this moment where he realized, he's like, I keep leaving this shit in the wheel well, in the foot passenger footwell. Like, why don't I just take this shit out and throw it away? And so from then on, he essentially was like, anytime something needs to be done, I'm just going to do it. Something that happens to me all the time is I see my kids' socks on the stairs because they take off their socks and shoes when they come in the door and everything. And then we just take their socks and throw them on the stairs. I used to walk by the socks on the way up the stairs. And then I'd come down, I'd see the socks again, and then I'd go up the stairs again, and the socks would still be there. And I'm like, why don't I just pick up the goddamn socks on my way up the stairs so I don't have to look at these socks 8 or 9 times in a day, you know, when I'm going up and down the stairs. It's like, why don't I just do the dumb thing that needs to be done? And that's what Joe Rogan and Adam Carolla have said, is they had this like mindset switch of, instead of ignoring, seeing this thing that I don't really feel like doing and ignoring it, I'm just going to get it over with. And that's the same thing with learning from your mistakes, right? It's like, okay, so I have bad audio. Why do I have bad audio? Well, because I just put one mic on the officiant, and then that's it. Because I'm scared of audio. I don't really understand audio. Like, I used to have all these excuses for why I didn't have good audio. And, oh, and at one point I even got to, like, I said something like, well, it's just not my style to put a bunch of, you know, sound bites in my films. Like, I don't really like making videos with sound bites or whatever. That was so lame. That was such a lame excuse of, oh, it's just not my style. When in fact, it wasn't that it wasn't my style. It was just that I didn't want to tackle this problem of, you know, how do I get better audio? And I remember the year that I finally decided, like, you know what? This is the year where I'm going to go out. I'm going to spend an entire day or 2 days if I have to. I'm going to read every article that I can find about audio equipment and recording live events. And I'm going to buy that equipment that I need in order to record these vows and these toasts and these, you know, anything that might pop up during the wedding day. And that was like that year. That was one of the best years I ever had. I really do feel like that year, and particularly the year after, not only did my videos go to the next level because I was willing to just say, fuck it, like, let me get some good audio going. But the next year, like, my bookings were just through the roof. Like, my calendar was so full. And I don't think it had ever been that full before. And it was just because I was willing to do the Joe Rogan thing and tackle the bullshit and be like, you know what? I'm done having bad audio. I'm done shooting the ceremony with two cameras. You're going to have these moments as a videographer where you're like, I really need to improve this thing. And for me right now, it's, I really need to always have a second person at the wedding. Like, that's another thing that I've always kind of put off. And that sounds probably crazy to some people who always have like an assistant shooter at every wedding you go to. But for me, it's like, I've done so many solo weddings that, I don't know, I got comfortable with it, but it's not really serving me well anymore. And so I think that's the next thing on my bullshit list that I need to tackle, is just always having somebody with me to film and putting them on gimbal. Hey, get some gimbal shots. Like, I want, you know, all the great gimbal shots that I honestly don't feel like messing with. Unless, of course, I get the Ronin 4D, because I actually really want that camera. And if I get that camera, then I might be the one wanting to do all the gimbal shots, because that camera is like, it just looks so cool. And I've read reviews about it and seen like video reviews on it. And people say it's like, it's so awesome. Like, it's so much better than a gimbal because you don't have to really mess with the balance very much, especially if you're using the DJI lenses that are designed for the camera. So yeah, if I get that, then I don't know. I mean, I'll probably still have people come help me, but I might be doing the gimbal shots myself. So yeah, that was a kind of a discombobulated rant there. But yeah, learn from your mistakes, be willing to tackle the bullshit, and you'll know when you're not doing something totally right, because you'll feel like this like guilt or this this like kind of like this nudge, this internal nudge that like, oh, I kind of need to fix this thing that I'm not doing correctly. All right. So another thing that's super important, and I think I've done it pretty well overall. Every once in a while, I still screw this up a little bit, but I would say for the most part, I've been really good about communicating with my clients. I found that most of my clients are really forgiving for a lot of things, especially if I just shoot them an email and let them know what's up. So if I have a client whose wedding I'm not going to deliver on time, I just send them a quick email explaining, hey, this is what's going on. This is when I think I'll have your video done. I'm sorry for the delay. And then I usually throw in a, like some sort of like, I don't know, indirect compliment, you know, that's like, hey, I'm going to be late, but I just wanted to say thank you, thank you, thank you for all the grace and patience that you've shown me. You know, this year has been incredibly difficult, but you guys have been a bright spot in all the chaos. Like just saying something like that makes people feel, I don't know, it makes them feel special. It makes them feel like you think really good things about them. And then if they are upset about you being late, they're probably not going to tell you because you just spent a bunch of time, or not a bunch of time, but you just sent like an indirect compliment to them, letting them know that you think that they're great. And, you know, I'll also say something like, it kind of changes here and there, but also I might say something like, you know, I'm just so lucky to have so many great clients or whatever who are so patient and understanding. So I'm not necessarily even saying that they are patient and understanding in some of my emails, but that I have a bunch of great clients like them who are patient and understanding, right? So like, it's kind of like this indirect way of communicating a compliment without making it seem like, hey, I'm just giving you this compliment. I'm just trying to butter you up because I'm telling you some bad news or whatever. So yeah, sometimes you just got to be a little sneaky with your communication, but, make sure you're always communicating with your clients. And yeah, if you're going to be late or something, just let them know, what's up. And even if they don't email you back, I guarantee you your clients like that you're communicating with them. Okay, so the fourth thing that I've done that I think has been really beneficial to me, and I think that I've done it pretty well, is I've developed organic relationships with planners and photographers, and also other vendors, but I would say as far as vendors go, planners and photographers are where I get most of my referrals from. And so those are kind of the most meaningful relationships to me, although I like to have some good DJ friends too, because it's nice to just know who you like to work with as far as DJs are concerned, just because they are kind of an integral part of you recording toasts at a wedding. So I like them too. But as far as referrals go, photographers and planners are where it's at. So how do I develop these organic relationships? And what does organic even mean, right? That's just kind of like a buzzword or whatever. What I mean by organic is, So in my time, I've met a lot of different vendors. I've met flower people and DJs and, you know, cake people and linen rental company people. Like I've met all sorts of people, and it seems like there's two kinds of vendors out there. There's the kind of vendor that you show up, you work with, they're really nice, they're approachable, they're kind. They help you with whatever you need. You help them with whatever they need. And maybe neither of you really needs anything from one another, but you just, you know, you smile, you make a little chit chat, and it makes you feel like you've got a friend at an event that you're working, and it feels like you're not alone, right? The other kind of vendor is the vendor who's very interested in networking, and they want to give you their business card. And which is fine. I'm not against business cards personally, but I can't tell you how many times people have given me their business card before I've even worked with them. Like I'm at the event that we're gonna work together, but it's the beginning of the event. Like, I don't even know if you're any good or not. And you're giving me your business card and asking that I recommend you or whatever. And I think videographers, there's videographers that fall into this trap out there too, where it's like, they want to work, they want planners to recommend them. So they think, I'm going to go ask this planner that I've never worked with to recommend me. I think that's a bad idea, because that planner's never worked with you. Why would they recommend you? They don't know who you are. They don't have any experience with you. So what I tell people is, when you want to work with a planner, let's say you go to a wedding, you work with a planner, you see that they put on a really good event, everything went really smoothly, you like the timeline, you like their personality, they were really nice, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, I want to work with this person again. I would encourage you not to go up to the planner and be like, here's my business card, I hope you recommend me to all your couples. Like, that's an insane, it's not an insane thing to do, but it's like, it's just too aggressive and too direct. You know, I think there's a time and place to be direct about things, but this is kind of like a weird thing that people do. And I've always found it off-putting. So what I recommend is, if you find yourself at a wedding where you're like, man, I really want to shoot more weddings like this, I did a good job today, I know the video is going to turn out really well. Okay, great. So at the end of the night, go up to the planner and just say, hey, I wanted to say thank you for all your hard work, for keeping everybody on track and making this a great event for the couple. That's it. That's all you have to do is say, hey, I think you did a really great job, you should be proud of yourself. The end. That compliment will actually go a long way at the end of the night when the planner is really tired. And it's still like, they probably still haven't heard a whole lot of thank yous from anybody yet. And it's the end of the night and they're tired. So you might be that first like big thank you, great job sort of interaction that they have, and that's going to make them feel really good. Now, I'm not saying go up to the planner and lie and be like, hey, you did a great job, if like things fall apart. Like, if, because the planner is going to know if things fell apart. And if you walk up and you say, hey, this was the best wedding I've ever been to, they're going to know that you're bullshitting them, right? And they don't want that. So, you know, make sure that you're sincere, honest, but also super concise. And I don't know, I'm not a huge fan of, again, I'm not against business cards, but I'm not a huge fan of you slipping them the business card at the end of the night. And the same is kind of true with photographers. Like, I found that photographers are more inclined to be like, what's your Instagram profile or whatever, and they'll follow you. And, you know, by the end of the day, I know almost halfway through the day whether or not I would want to work with a photographer again or not. And so I actually just did a wedding last weekend. I did a wedding with a photographer who, she had a really familiar face. And I was like, I'm pretty sure I've worked with you, but I don't know when or where or who the couple was. At least that's what I was thinking in my head. And then she actually said that to me like a couple hours into the shoot. She's like, I think maybe we've worked together. She's like, you look familiar. And I was like, yeah, I was thinking that you look familiar too. So I'm sure we have worked together. I don't know where. And then she came up to me later and said that she had looked on, I can't remember where she looked, but she found that we had done this wedding together. And I was actually really surprised about which wedding it was, because it was this tiny little wedding, this crazy tiny little budget venue. I had forgot that I even did this wedding. It was like so unusual for me to shoot such a tiny budget venue that I'm actually kind of surprised that I forgot about it, but I did, because it was like kind of an odd booking for me. So here we are at like a way nicer wedding working together again. And by the end of the night, she was like, hey, I actually really like working with you. She's like, sometimes when a videographer shows up, I get really nervous because I just don't, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if I'm going to like working with this person. I don't know if they're nice. I don't know if they're just going to get in my way all day. And yeah, I was like, yeah, I feel the same way about photographers. Like, I don't know. Like, if I've never worked with them before, I just don't know what to expect. So it's always nice to work with people that I know that, you know, are super respectful and And yeah, she was great. I made sure she got all the shots that she needed, and you know, I got all the shots that I needed. So it was great. That just like not being so direct about like, I want to work with you again, like that kind of stuff. Please recommend me to your clients. Here's my business card. Like all that kind of stuff is just not, it's just not super natural. And so when I talk about building these organic relationships, it's go to the wedding, do your job, be professional, don't talk too much, be kind, make sure that you are helping other people as much as you can accomplish their goals. And if you do that, people are going to remember you. And it might take working with them, you know, more than once for them to remember you, but that's okay. Like eventually over the course of a year or two, you will start building these organic relationships with people. All right. So number five, this is probably the easiest one, the most simple, the one that I will talk about the least, and that is hire a CPA, a certified public accountant. Please, if you do not have a CPA doing your taxes for you, you need to find a good CPA to do your taxes for you. You don't necessarily need them to do all the bookkeeping. Extra brownie points, I guess, if you do. Even I don't do that. I do all my own bookkeeping through a website application called 17 Hats. It's what I use for my contracts and my invoicing, and yeah, it's how I keep track of all my clients, and it has like a bookkeeping feature in there that's fairly robust. It's good enough for me. But yeah, you can hire someone to just always track your expenses and do all that stuff for you. I don't. But at the very least, you need to find a CPA who's really good. And then once you get in with them, just as long as they're good, stick with them year after year. Make sure they're the ones filing your taxes for you every single year. Not only will it make tax season so much easier, like the first time you go in, you might be a little overwhelmed because they're going to be like, hey, I need this info, I need that info, I need this info, I need that info. But once they have it in their system, it's going to be saved almost certainly for you for next year. So now when I go in, my tax appointments used to be like an hour and a half long for the first couple years that I was doing it. And now when I go in, it's like I'm there for like 25 minutes maybe. And she just asked me a few questions. And honestly, most of that 25 minutes is me just sitting there while she does stuff on the computer. And it's just gotten so much easier. And I know what you're thinking, isn't a CPA expensive? Yeah, I spend like $500 a year to have my CPA file my taxes for me. So yes, it is a little bit expensive. It's $500 for me. I don't know how much it's going to be for you, but it's $500 for me. I cannot tell you how insanely good of a return on my investment hiring my CPA has been. I used to pay out the ass in taxes. I mean, just like the IRS was just taking me down to Pound Town. It was. I get like really amped up about this stuff because I remember my first year where I was doing really, really well. And I ended up with this massive tax bill at the end of the year because I didn't really know what I was doing with my taxes. And so this tax bill took me like 2 years to pay off. Like it was so discouraging and so disheartening because I had the best year I'd ever had. I was so proud. I was like bragging to my wife. And then I get this letter from the IRS in the mail, and it was like this, I owed this massive amount of money that I didn't have. And so I had to go on a payment plan. It was a whole thing. It took me like 2 years to pay it off. It sucked. And so I was like, I never want to go through that again. So yeah, make sure that you hire a CPA. I'm telling you, they will save you so much money. The $500 is like nothing. Like if they're going to save you $10,000, why would you not spend $500? So yeah, hire a CPA. Thankfully, I've been doing that for the last, I'd say, 4 or 5 years. And it's crazy. I would never go back to doing my own taxes. Not in a million years. It's like the most, I would say it's It's actually reckless for you to try to do your own taxes. No offense to everybody out there, but honestly, I think it's reckless. Because even if you understand all the deductions and everything, which you probably don't, but even if you do, there's also different kinds of tax credits and different sorts of, I don't know, I guess loopholes is really the only word I can use to describe these different things that you can do to limit your tax liability. So just hire a CPA, I'm begging you. All right, guys. So I hope to be back next episode with Adam B. Radley, the man, the myth, the torso, fresh off of banging his wife over the weekend. I don't know. I have no idea. They might just be going out to dinner or something. I don't know. But yeah, we'll be back next week. And if you guys like the show, please don't forget to leave a review and subscribe so you never miss a new episode. Until next time, guys, later. Hey guys, this episode of Wedding Videography School is brought to you by Photographers Wearing Wide Brim Hats. Photographers Wearing Wide Brim Hats is the nation's number one wedding photography company, and for good reason. They are clearly the most creative, most unique individuals out there, and their photography is so creative, I can't even begin to describe how creative it is. That's how creative it is. If you guys are working with photographers who aren't wearing wide brim hats, then you're probably not working with the best photographers out there. So, you know, whether you're having a wedding, a birthday party, or you're taking your kids to school, or you're hanging out at home, or going to the bathroom, you know, all things that you want photographed creatively, it should be done by photographers wearing wide brim hats. A lot of you guys, I know you're working with photographers who aren't wearing wide brim hats. They might not be wearing hats at all. And that's a problem. If they're not wearing a wide brim hat, I don't know what the point of them even picking up a camera is. But when you work with photographers wearing wide brim hats, you know that you're always getting someone who's going to give you the most incredible shots that you could imagine. So for your next event, whether it's a wedding, a birthday party, a family reunion, your mom's pap smear, whatever the event, make sure that you hire photographers wearing wide brim hats to get the most creative still images captured, you know, one frame at a time. And that's what photography is. It's, you know, you hear the click, click, and you know you got one frame. And then you hear another click. Sometimes you hear eight clicks in a row, like click, 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 click. That they just got eight pictures, and maybe one of them is good. Probably not. But the photographer wearing a wide brim hat, they are going to cull those photos later on and, you know, really, really select the eight or six shots that they got from the entire day that they stood in front of the videographer to get. And they're gonna edit those down into something truly magical. Probably just 2 8x10s that you can put in the living room next to the closet door. So give photographers with wide brim hats a call today and book them for your next event.